Before I start, I would like to lead a really short prayer to the sentient beings from the compassion of Bodhisattvas and all the Buddhas, that the compassion and the merit of this talk and the merit of listening to this talk be spread and benefit all sentient beings. Thank you very much. I have to say that my talk is a little superficial, and I try by all means to touch all the elements that basically a Buddhist need to know about psychology. But I prepare this lecture in a very short period of time because invitation to come to Malaysia was of short notice, and I plan to do some other things and then to also to come here as a kind of external, as a side way. And before I start my talk, have you any question in your mind about why Buddhist monks have to shave their head? So after the talk, I hope you have the answer, okay? There are five spiritual questions that we all ask ourselves now and then. The first is, who am I? What is this world? What is the meaning of my life? And what will happen to me after I die? And when something bad happened to us, we always question why this bad thing happened to me or to my loved ones. These are five basic questions that all religious tradition addressed. Now, what happened to Buddhism is that Buddhism also deal with these five questions in one other way. Before going to the context of Buddhist psychology, I would like to address some common nature of all religions, that religion provide two things. The first one is a model of, and the second one is a model for. The model of is the what is reality. It gives you the answer, what is real. Model of reality. And model for is what is the duty and goal in man's life. What we're supposed to do. So these are common things, model of and model for. All religions provide this. Now, Indian religion has special characteristic. When I talk about Indian religion, I mean religions which were born in India. Brahminism, Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and other parts of Indian religion. There are common things also in Indian religion. First, the landscape of wisdom, and second, the landscape of love, and lastly, the landscape of power. There were three dimensions or three areas which exist in all Indian religion in the past until now. Buddhism has no exemption from this. Now, when we talk about psychology, the word psychology is a new term. It belongs to modern scientific community. It concerns the study of the mind and the nature of mind, and some people in later time try to explain it in terms of behavior, because mind is a little too abstract to understand. And then in traditional society, there is no such a thing as psychology. It is a mixture. In Buddhism also, it's a mixture between morality, precept, and practices, and melt into one single path. But what is outstanding of Buddhism is the Tripitaka, the canon of Buddhism, is full of specific terms in psychology. You name it, mind, mental mechanism, different layers, different functions of feelings and what is inside the mind. And it exists more than in other religious texts in the world, much more than any other religion from the past. This is very rich. And some people take Buddhism as a religion of psychotherapy. It exists to relieve people from pain and suffering of life. So in one way, the Buddha addressed himself that he acts as a doctor, and the Dharma is his medicine for healing. Now, I hope to bring this image. This is a picture, a painting of a Thai artist, very well known in Thailand, describing the scene of the birth of the Buddha. Now, when the Buddha was born, it is believed that he took 7 steps. He descended from the womb of his mother with 2 feet descending down. In medical term, we call double footling. And then that is the most difficult position for a baby to be delivered. He descended down without any pain, and there were 2 streams from the heaven. The one is a hot stream and the other is cold stream, and washed clean all the dirt from the womb. And then the Brahma fetched him first, handling and passed him to deity, and then from deity to human beings. And as soon as he touched the ground, the baby took 7 steps. And each step, there sprung lotus flowers. And the Buddha stood firm as a young man on the 7th step on the lotus and declared, "I am the most excellent person in the world. This is my last rebirth." He declared himself that way. Now, before the Buddha, there were 6 gurus. How we interpret this? The lotus flowers which emerge from the ground, the lotus symbolize teaching, religions. The Buddha steps over 6 lotus flowers. That means he passed through all the teaching of 6 other gurus before him. And he stood firm on the 7th. He declared his teaching on the 7th. The 7th lotus is his own religion, where he delivered to the people the excellent message. Now, the 6 gurus, they are Magali Gosala, Achyutakesa Kambali, Sanjaya Belatiputta, Purana Kassapa, Bhagutta Gajayana, and Nikantanata Puttas. All of these 6, only one that we know very well, how they believe, and they are the last person, Nikantanata Putta. His name commonly known in India and the world of religion is Mahavira, the founder of Jainism. These are 6 gurus. Their teaching symbolized in 6 lotuses where the Buddha stepped over. Now, I would like to say, what are they? Magali Gosala, he's a theistic, a believer in God. He believed that the world is created and guided by the will of God alone. In theology, we have a term for that, it's called determinism. One cannot change the course of life or the world, everything has been predestined. Many Hindus are still believing in it. And still, in theological religion, many people still follow what Magali Gosala believes. Achyutakesa Kambali, he's a materialistic. He believes in no good or evil. He doesn't believe in the afterlife. And he doesn't believe there's any ground development of virtuous life. So materialism is not new. Sanjaya Belatiputta, he's agnostic, a skeptic. Probably some personality like Socrates, or we love to question people, challenge people. And his basic notion is like belief in afterlife, moral responsibility could not be rationally demonstrated or verified. See? So Indian also had Socrates, Sanjaya. There were two great monks, known later as Sariputta and Moggallana, the once disciple of Sanjaya, Velatiputta. So they were well trained to be skeptical, agnostic. And when I was studying at Oxford, I talked to many Christian friends who study theology, and they called me agnostic, always, because I always questioned about the nature of God, whether God exists and how you prove. And Sariputta and Moggallana were converted to Buddhism later. Probably agnosticism and Buddhism were not very much far away from each other. Purana Kassapa, he believed in natural determinism. He doesn't believe in personal existence of God. He believes that nature is a form of determination. We are here because of natural cause. No natural distinction between good and bad. Bhagavad-gita, he loved to categorize things. Maybe in this day we call him physicist, and he said reality could not be explained in these three categories. And last person is Nikantanata Buddha, Mahavira. He is relativist. He believes that life or jiva is everywhere. Karma cannot be undone. It is a cause of samsara, cause of rebirth. His religion is known today as Jainism, you see. So there are many things that Buddhism and Jainism shared in common. But a lot of argument, Jainism also produced a lot of sound arguments, questioning about reality, about morality, what is good and what is bad. Now when they come to Buddhism, look at the model of reality that offered in Buddhism. In Buddhism, the cosmos, universe, is godless, uncreated, timeless, infinite. Animals, it include human beings, are trapped in what we call samsara. The word samsara means migrating together. It's a huge round of migration. Sara from Sanskrit root sru to wander. Wandering about together is a perpetual cycles of rebirth and re-death. And in Buddhist cosmology, things are not permanent, also including Buddhism. Finally, Buddhism will disappear from the earth, from the world. Earth is not the only planet habited by man. This is accepted in all schools of Buddhism. In Pure Land Buddhism, for instance, Pure Land is on the west of the earth, created by Amitabha Buddha. Now, Buddha, the rise of the Buddha is a national manifestation, a rediscovery. The Buddha was a rediscoverer of Buddhism. He was the first one who found the Dharma. The Dharma exists for a long time, and it was forgotten, and he rediscovered it, and all the Buddhas of the past, of the future, preach the same kind of teaching. And this is the part of cosmic manifestation. In summary, in a nutshell, all things of Buddha teaching can be summarized. It's boiled down to the term dukkha and its solution. The dukkha on the one hand and the solution on the other. But what is dukkha? Buddhists use the term dukkha as a cliche in Buddhism for a long time. And when English people study Buddhism, they don't know what word to translate, and most Buddhists translate to them as suffering, pain, dissatisfaction. But the understanding of dukkha is very important. Dukkha comes from the word in Prakrit language. Originally, it was used among craftsmen who work with carts and tools. They describe a situation when two objects which are supposed to fit in with each other fail to do so. The object failed to fit in. the situation is called dukkha. In English idiom, there is a saying that to put a square peg into a round hole, or to put a round peg in a square hole, either of them are dukkha. And that is very basic one. So how will you translate this situation? Dukkha can be a cause of dissatisfaction, but also can be a cause of creation. Like, take for example, when Isaac Newton tried to find nature of gravity, he saw an apple fell to the ground. Some people said it fell on his head. Then he has the idea. He bridged the gap of dukkha. When Einstein discovered theory of relativity, how did he do that? He observed the situation with original theory of physics could not explain. He think, he calculate, and finally the bridge, the gap was bridged. The bridge was done. All creativity of the world is a result of dukkha too. So when you overcome dukkha, you make a creation. You make a new things. So dukkha is nothing bad. Now we talk about macrocosm, and now body and mind is another term, is microcosm. In Buddhism, the mind and body are interdependent on each other. Both are always changing, but one cannot exist without the other. The mind has four modes of functions, and there is no other intrinsic element or permanent self or so behind the interdependence of the elements or the mechanism. But beings, man and animals, cling to the five psycho-physical constituents which know and identify as self. The five psycho-physical constituents, in Pali we call panchakhanda. Some people translate as five aggregates, and namely physicality, rupa, sensation or feeling, vedana, memory or perception, sanya, volition formation, sankhara, and lastly consciousness or cognition. Five elements which build up a basic unit which we feel. This is our self. In general Buddhist concept is that there is three universal characteristics which dominate or generalize Buddhist precept of reality. Human life is always short and precious. Buddhas always encourage people to make the most of their life and out of their time. Not to waste time, even a second, is important for the or striving for good or for liberation. Also, duality undergirds most Buddhist invitation of reality. And in Buddhism, there is a balance between emotional and intellectual strand of the mind, balance between power and virtue, work and faith. Hardly exists in other religion. And also, everyone in the world, all of us here, is mentally ill. The good news, savely the arahat. So you can claim by the lens of the Buddha, we have mental sickness. I would like to speak on the balance of the mind. In Buddhism, Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana are alike. There is balance of the mind with the emotional and intellectual strand of the mind. For example, compassion and wisdom. You see, are the main virtue exists in all school of Buddhism alike. And also we see manifestation in Mahayana Buddhism. Manjushri is the Lord of Wisdom, Bodhisattva of Great Wisdom, Avalokiteshvara, the Lord of Compassion. If we see in Theravada Buddhism, we see Shariputta, is a Lord also is excellent on wisdom. Moggallana has a very gentle, compassionate personality. He always rushes to help people. Outgoing. You see? Even though people may say Mahayana and Theravada are so well apart from each other, but in terms of balance, Mahayana and Theravada share the same foundation of balance of emotion and intellectual. Also, power and virtue. Anyone who come to be important guys, be a Buddha must be good and also powerful. We cannot think of a Buddha who has power without virtue, or virtue without power. A bodhisattva cannot be a bodhisattva is he only has power to destroy things, or no virtue bodhisattva at all. They don't exist. This is another balance. And also work and faith. If you want to win Nirvana, want to be liberated in Theravada Buddhism, you have to work. It will not come to you as grace. You have to strive, work your way towards liberation. Your life is not determined to win unless you work. So, and when you do so, you have to do with faith. Work and faith all together come along. Now explain briefly about physicality. This is basic Buddhist meditation. When monks got together and recite in early morning, one part of the contemplation is about the composition of the body. Have the head, have the body, nails, teeth, skin, muscle, sinew, bone marrow, etc. This is a part of earth element. Water elements are blood, urine, pus, etc. Wind elements, the movement, metabolic movement of the bowel, blowing up or blowing down, or intestinal winds. Fire element, digestive heat, body heat, and space element, ethereal element, which fill up the space in the body. The nature of the body, the nature of feeling, of vedana in Buddhism, feeling is a result of the contact between sense object and the senses. This is different, I have to say, from modern psychology. The model of contact in psychology, in modern psychology, is the light. Like, for example, we have an eye contact. When a light travels to the retina of our eyeballs, and then the nerve impulse goes to the area 17, 18, 19 at the occipital area of the brain, then we have perception. Indian model of perception is different from modern ones. They believe that our eyes has the light. Eyes is the organ of light producing. It shines the light and touch like a hand and grasp the object, the image of the object, and brought back to the eye. The Buddha is referred to as eye of the world because he give light to the world, not because he observed the world. So the model of contact is different. There are three types of feeling, sukha, dukkha, like what I said before. If the feeling fit in with the expectation, so we call it sukha. If it doesn't fit in, it's dukkha. And the last one is cannot be identified whether it belongs to any of them. Memory, sanjaya, memory is always impermanent. So you may forget whatever I said tonight. And the image of memory is a mirage. It never still. And we also have bias. We remember what we want to remember, what boosts up our ego and pride, what makes us feel good. And also we have reverse bias. We we remember bad things, especially when other people did it to us. And also, memory is a reservoir of food for consciousness. In the model of the five aggregates, they subsist on each other. The consciousness also has another part, the unconsciousness motivation. There is in our own nature, there's a drive or craving called kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. Deep inside anusya, they are more subtle, potentiality, and intentional. It can be provoked by any contact with the outside world. I will go to that later. And lastly, the nature of consciousness, vijnana. In its own pure and true nature, vijnana is bright and shining and happy. Why we are unhappy? We are unhappy because it clouded my mental defilement. Defilement is a kind of dirt. There are three forms of them: lobha, dosa, moha, greed, hatred, and delusion. Now, the images of the mind in Buddhism, the Buddha spoke about it in many forms. First is a stream. Consciousness is like a stream, it flows and has a deeper layer of mental dynamic current. Or, image of it like a monkey, it is active, arbitrary, wild, take one idea at a time before passing to the other. Or is a burning fire, a lamp, subsisting on material fuel of the mind. Or is a fish thrown out of water, agitating, restless, untrained. Or is an arrow, need to be fixed carefully. Or a house with a well thatched or poorly thatched. Now, in the deepest drive of our own existence, there are three cravings. Craving for sensual pleasure, kama tanha. Craving for becoming, bhava tanha. Craving for transformation, avoidance. And finally, annihilation, vibhava tanha. The craving is all in the deepest in our instinct. Its image, its architect, an internal drive that motivates the mind. And also, second image is called Mara, or death, and sometimes personifies the god of death. Another intellectual side of tanha is avidya. Avidya is intellectual dimension of tanha. It clouds the thinking. I like to compare with one of the greatest psychoanalysts, Sigmund Freud. Freud's concept, he said, in a man, there's always three instincts. Libido, his sexual desire, ego instinct, and death instinct. Who copied? Whether Freud copied from Buddha? I don't know. From the instinct, it branched out into greed, hatred, and delusion. And the opposite is non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. Now, when you said greed and hatred and delusion, it means the instinct has become a motivation. If it remained there, it remained an instinct. But once it creates an action, that is called greed, hatred, or delusion. How does self form? Assuming that one is five aggregates of psychophysical consciousness leads to the formation of I, me on mine. There is a word in Sanskrit and many times in Pali, ahamgara. Aham means I. It's cognate to Latin word ego. The ego maker or I maker. Mamamkara. Mamam is a Sanskrit word for mind. Mind maker. This is me and this is mine. So our thoughts today are not much different from that of yesterday. Because we cling to the thought process, the shadow, the impression of thought that we have from yesterday. And the multi layers of mental defilements, within the formation of me and mine. There are different layers of false egos. We call Sakyaditti. Sakaya means the, and ditti means the erroneous personal belief. Sakaya means attached to the body. The view, the erroneous view that attached to the body are 20 forms. I'm not going to the name of each of them, but I summarize the first 1 to 5, an ego, people identify with the person, the 5 aggregates. From 6 to 7, ego is contained within. You feel that within you, there is a self. The first 1 to 5 category, you are the ego. Category 6 to 7, ego is within you. Number 11 to 12, ego is independent of them. It's outside. And 16 to 20, egos belong to. You can control that. It's another outside constituent. When these formation of defilement as a potentiality within the consciousness, it has these characteristics: sensual craving, anger, conceit, erroneous opinion, and skepticism. Craving for existence, ignorance, avidya. There's 7 sides of this inbuilt within our human consciousness. But when we talk about liberation, the defilement which retains us in the world is called kankers, the kankers of sensual pleasure, the kankers of becoming, the kankers of false will, the kanker of ignorance. These come from craving. This will is very well known in Buddhist world. It's called independent origination or paticcasamuppada. It begins with ignorance. Another side of ignorance is craving. From craving, ignorance causes volition. From volition, causes consciousness. From consciousness, name and form. Then the form causes sixth sense. Sixth sense is causes contact. Contact called feeling. Feeling causes craving. Craving called clinging. Clinging becoming. And then birth, decay, and death. Come back to origin, tanha or avidya. The cycles is manifest into 12 steps. The Buddha was the first one to mention about samsara, moksha, or karma. The nature of karma is what goes round comes around. You are responsible doer of the action. The word karma comes from Sanskrit, Pali kamma, Thai kam, or in Burmese gan. It means deed or action, can be mental action or physical action. It doesn't mean normal action, it means significant action, the action that counts. So in Buddhism, manokarma, the mental action, is the most important among the 3 kinds of action. And that is intention, indeed, is karma. In Jainism, physical action is the most important. When you cling to the self, when you perform all habitual action, you develop personality. There are 6 forms of personality. The person is dominated by greed, by hatred, by delusion, by faith, by worry, and by intelligence. These are the 6 key personality as classified in Buddhist texts. Now, how does karma take action? Karma form within the mind and carry for next life. In Brahmanism, what karma, what the action that count is the sacrificial karma, the karma of sacrifice, verbal injunction. In Jainism, any form of action, but physical action takes the priority. Now in Buddhism, karma form can be classified according to time of its fruition, to its function, and its potentiality. The karma which give immediate retribution, the karma which give it retribution in the next life, or life after next, or no retribution at all. This is category one. The karma which is birth leading, when the person is dying, the consciousness which emerged at the moment, the last thought, will predestine the rebirth place. And the karma which follow that is the karma which supported or supportive karma. The karma which stop that, which we try to intervene, is called obstructive karma. And the karma which terminate the person, killing karma, the terminator karma, kill the actor. Karma according to potentiality, heavy karma, without any priority, there is no other karma heavier than heavy karma. It's like immediate fruition. Without heavy karma, the habit that one form will fruit out. And without habitual karma, the near-death karma will fruit out. And without the near-death karma, minor karma fruit out without any other. In Buddhism, sin cannot be redeemed. What is done is undone. But merit cannot directly replace demerit. But demerit, however, can be diluted and or balanced out by stopping evil action and commence on the good, especially by the mind or meditation. Merit can be shared. Merit is not subjective and can be transferred to other people. Merit transfer is a part of daily Buddhist practice, find in all Buddhist denomination. And by expressing empathy to others, appreciating the merit performed by others, we also gain merit. Belief in karma is a part of Buddhist psychology. It enforces moral strength. It creates fear against evil action. It's an incentive for doing good action. And it creates acceptance for problems in life. Life for Buddhists is determined by karma. Karma of intention predestined life of beings, and mind as a citta, as a creator and accumulator of karma. Karma produces an affiliation with personality, people, situation, and society. Suppose we love to drink. Drinkers love to make friends with drinkers. Gamblers love to make friends with gamblers. And then they find themselves in a good society. And they drink, they gamble. So they together, this is the karma within the mind, this form the affiliation and show an expectation and drive them towards that particular place, personality or time. And then it rails the doer of karma to specific destiny, gravitating the mind or the personality to the destiny. In other words, the karma transforms the character of the mind where it's retained. As soon as life ends, the accumulated karma of the person causes a formation of new psychophysical constituent attracted to its appropriate sphere of rebirth. That how rebirth mechanism is fulfilled. So, with regard to this, we have five spiritual question answer. Who am I? The answer is the body of five aggregates, psychophysical constituents. What is the world? The world is uncreated, timeless. There are many places of rebirth, men, animals, fear of hungry ghosts, heavens, and all are impermanent. Meaning of life. The Buddha never tell this to anyone. The Buddha never say. And I surmise that if you are in front of the Buddha and said, what is meaning of my life? The Buddha would say, you tell me. And what will happen to me after I die? It depends on your last thought. What and why this bad thing happened to me or my loved one? The answer is the karma. Simple as that. In America they say shit happened. And then there are different religion give different answer to why shit happened to me. Muslim will say this shit come from Allah. Catholic will say you deserve it. But what will a Protestant say? Protestant will say, why did it happen to other people? Because Protestant believe that they are the selected group, grace of God. When bad thing happened, why did it happen to other people? America is a good country, you see. A lot of Protestants, when bad thing happened, they say, why it happened to other country? Pointing to other people. So it's the nature of religion change, mentality of people. But what Hindus say, they say this shit happened before. In Hindu stories, there were always stories of bad things happen. And when a bad thing happened, there will be prediction, a guru will appear and tell stories. Oh, this happened long, long time ago in this way, and it's so this way. So these Hindu ways of answering the question. So that was answer. But what did we say? Your karma. So any question? I enjoy answering questions from the floor. And when I teach in university, in class, I tell my student the first time that you have all the right to interrupt my talk at any moment. And also, if any one of you have your own idea and I cannot argue against it, you get an A.